right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. And this says, before the first cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad to be back. I had a couple days off with the school break on Friday and Monday, but I am back in the seat again. It is 67 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. We just had some rain blow through, and it was a little bit chilly last night, but looks like it's going to be a nice one today, nice fall day. So where do we leave off on Thursday? We titled the show TPP, Sovereignty Lost, DMCA Censorship, and Big Pharma. We looked for 2 days at some of the new things that are coming down the pike with the TPP, if they ink it, and we know that they probably are going to. One of the things was some new teeth that they were going to put into the copyright law that will prevent us from sharing information. And honestly, I really hope that there is some additional detail. I saw that WikiLeaks released the entire document on Friday, I believe. And I have to say it was lots and lots and lots of techno babble. So it's going to take some time of combing through that to really understand what they're pushing. But basically, what we were seeing was that they were going to put some real teeth into the copyright law that will prevent us from not only sharing information, but using information, using stories that are out there, putting some real fines behind copyright infringement to come after any websites that link to stuff. At one point, I remember even reading a story where they were talking about breaking the underlying mechanisms for the way the internet worked, where even hyperlinking to another website or to an article was going to be considered some sort of infringement. And I mean, the internet works based on hyperlinks, so that would be absolutely ridiculous. And let's hope that the people who are writing these bills who don't understand how the internet works don't get to that level. But probably the biggest copyright issue that we saw coming was the one that had to do with Big Pharma and their new biologics. Is that what they called them? Bio something. The new RNAi, mad science gone mad drugs. I don't remember what they called them. I'm looking here to see. I don't know. It was some sort of biological something. But they're referring to all these new drugs that we've spent many, 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 many shows looking at. And how they work and some of this new technology. And it's not just for the big pharma. They also mentioned copyrights for big agra. So, of course, we discovered that that same RNA interference technology that they're using in some of these drugs is the exact same thing that Monsanto is using as their quote-unquote new insecticide, basically being able to flip switches off in insects that consume the food that would turn off certain nutrients being produced within the body, so it would cause them to die a slow death. So I don't know. That's something to pay attention to. The Dark Act I saw too is coming fast and furious. That has not gone away. They are working on trying to get rid of all labeling laws whatsoever, so you don't know what's in your food or where your food is coming from, whether or not there's GMO or anything like that. And again, that's another whole entire show once we see how this all fleshes out. But if you haven't kept up on those things, go back through my archives. We've done probably, I'd say, 5 or 6 shows between the Dark Act and the TPP and Big Pharma. I'd say there's way more even than that. I'm going to change gears, though, today. It's been a couple days off. I found some stories that I wanted to talk about today. There was a whole crap load of DARPA news that came out over the last few days that I'd like to look at. But also, I would like to look at some stuff getting into pharmaceuticals. So the story came out on, the 10th, so 3 days ago. And it caught my attention, titled Valeant, V-A-L-E-A-N-T, Pharmaceuticals. This is a company, I don't really know who this company is, but it's obviously a pharmaceutical company. Valeant Pharmaceuticals CEO, he's quoted as saying, "We are in the business of shareholder profit, not helping the sick." Now, how many times have we talked about that? where being able to slice and dice and put everyone into a database, whether it be for precision medicine or electronic medical health records, the 23andMe genome database that now is being shared with the National Institute of Health. Once they get all of our health data and what we're consuming and what we're taking into a database that they can subscribe to for $29.95 a month, remember, they can get rid of the line item budget that was for research and development. And hey, anytime we can get rid of line item budgets, that helps our bottom line, which always, always makes shareholders happy. We had said this about precision medicine, and absolutely is not for helping you and me. It is all about making certain that when the day comes, the rich and famous and powerful will be able to live forever because they're working on immortality projects. We have Google. We have, I think it was Paul Allen, right, for Microsoft. He's also got his immortality group up in Seattle. We have financial moguls buying up patents on pharmaceuticals and then raising the price from, I don't even remember what that one drug was just recently, but he raised it like 5,300%. And that's exactly what it is. And now with these copyright protections to add an additional 5 or 7 or 10 years or whatever it was in the TPP, I think they called them biologics. These were all these newfangled precision medicine drugs. To be able to now protect these with a patent, it means they can keep the price high. And it's not for third world nations, one of which the United States will be very soon. Anyway, let's read the story. Last month, Martin Shkreli became a household name, well, at least not in my household, but maybe in some. The CEO of Turing Pharmaceuticals, what an interesting name, is now infamous for raising the price of a newly acquired drug to $750 a pill. Oh, yeah, it must have been that dude. He also explained in an interview that his company was not alone in acquiring drugs currently on the market to raise their prices and, in turn, rapidly drive up their stock price. Now enter J. Michael Pearson, the current CEO of Valeant Pharmaceuticals, who recently said that his company's responsibility is to its shareholders, while making no mention of his customers who rely on his drugs to live. And you know, doesn't this again sound like another one of those large multinational corporations like Nestle, who is sucking water out of California aquifers for some paltry sum, like $500 and some odd a year that they're paying to the state of California, while turning around and selling it for, you know, 50 cents or a buck a bottle, saying that water is not a human right. Yes, we're seeing the writing on the wall. This is already this year, Valeant has increased the price of 56 of its drugs in its portfolio on an average of 66%, highlighted by their recent acquisition of Zegerid, Z-E-G-E-R-I-D, which they promptly raised prices 550%. You know, and this is really sick as we see the population of the globe, and I mean two places I could tell you, the United States and Japan, where our average age is moving up the scale and we are becoming more elderly. Of course, this all has to do with eugenics, not encouraging people to have children. You saw, we talked about Bill Gates with now his permanent birth control shot or whatever they were doing. I saw too. Actually, I don't think we ever talked about this story. Hold on. I maybe can do this while I'm yapping here. But there was a story that came out that I posted on my personal Facebook page last week about this new RNA or DNA shot that they're going to start using in cats to bring down the feral population. It is a permanent birth control shot because, of course, they're touting this, saying how wonderful it is. You won't have to go get your cat fixed anymore. You'll just have to get them this one shot. But, you know, don't think that this isn't all by design. Yeah, I found the story, so we'll read this one next. Don't think that this isn't all by design. We have an aging population, and we have large multinational corporations with immortality projects. We have this genome project that is across the board. We also have the brain project. And these are multinational projects between universities, governments, and researchers that, hey, you know, by 2045, I believe it is, that's the 2045 immortality project, they don't think we're going to have kids anymore because we'll be able to live forever. You know, it's all connected. So don't worry about it. Right now, we're going to make all the profits that we can. Anyone who doesn't get the drugs, who can't afford them, well, hey, Nina, when you cost the state too much to keep alive, we're just going to pull the plug. And only the rich people will be able to afford to stay healthy and live long and get some of these new treatments. All right, back to the story. Valeant increased the price of 56 of the drugs in his portfolio by an average of 66%, highlighted by the recent acquisition Zegerid, which they promptly raised prices 550%. And not only does this have unfortunate side effects of placing the price of life-saving drugs out of the reach for even moderately insured people, which is very true, that have copays. I mentioned this the other day. I know with my insurance, tier three drugs are at least $100 a pop. But it now has begun to call into question the sustainability of this rapidly spreading business model. And here's another thing. You know, if you think back to the day, back, I don't know, even 15 years ago with your health insurance, you could get generic equivalents for $5. That was the tier one, I believe, right? I don't know how it goes. If a tier one's the most expensive or it's the least expensive, but your generic drugs were on the lowest tier. And if there was a generic equivalent on a prescription form, and not that I'm encouraging anyone to take poisoning drugs, but, you know, sometimes they are necessary for certain issues, especially if, you know, we're talking about our parents or our grandparents that don't know any better and they're kind of far down the line. Nana might need to have her blood pressure medication because there's nothing else really that works anymore. But on the lower end generic equivalent, on the drug form, the doctor could check a box that either said DAW, which was dispense as written. So if they wrote a prescription for a name brand, they had to give you the name brand, or they could give you the generic equivalent. Well, with things such as the TPP that are going to be extending copyrights out 5, 7, 10 additional years on some of these new biologics drugs, that means there will be no generic equivalent. Now, I know we've talked about generics and how, just like in GMOs, there really is no additional testing required as long as the base formula is followed. Remember, GMO is an apple is an apple, a potato is a potato, a banana is a banana. Regardless of what switches are flipped inside, pretty much the same with the drugs. You have FDA rubber stamp approval. There is no one that is testing the efficacy of these Frankenstein versions of the original. Not that the original wasn't Frankenstein, at least in pharmaceuticals. But as long as it follows the formulation, it is rubber stamped and allowed to go on market as a generic drug. But they've been finding and doing some independent testing that generic drugs don't always work as well as the original because they're putting other shit in there. Anyway, so the prices of name brand drugs have skyrocketed. And we see why now, because there's no rules against making profit out of sick people, which we've known all along anyway. But even with insurance and even with the best insurance, if you're paying for a name brand drug, $100 or $1,000 for something that you need for treatment, that's not going to be very sustainable. It's basically what this is saying. In an interview with CNBC, Pearson, the CEO of Valeant Pharmaceuticals, defended his business practices of acquiring drugs instead of investing in research and development. Hey, because you know what? Acquiring someone else's research and development and then jacking the price sky high to make just pure profit is, hey, a hell of a lot easier. He says, quote, "My primary responsibility is to Valeant shareholders. We can do anything we want to do." I can't believe he even said this in an interview. "And we will continue to make acquisitions and we will continue to move forward," unquote. Since being named CEO in 2008, Valeant has acquired more than 100 drugs and has seen their stock price rise more than 1,000% with Pearson at the helm. I really hope he can sleep at night. This is just absolutely disgusting. But it appears that all of the public backlash over price gouging on prescription drugs, which has included both, believe it or not, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders taking a stance against the practice as a platform in their respective presidential campaigns, which, by the way, I believe tonight is the Democratic debate in New Hampshire. I saw Trump was there to check it out. This should be pretty interesting. I don't know. This probably won't be as fun as the Republican debate, but I think I'm still going to watch to see who's slinging mud. It has placed the practice of jacking up drug prices under tremendous scrutiny. The House Committee on Oversight and Governmental Reform is planning to issue a subpoena for information on recent price increases from both Pearson and the dude at the beginning, that Shriekly, and that pending investigation has sent Valeant stock price tumbling more than 27%, oh boo-hoo, in the last month, which may have shareholders concerned enough to wonder if Pearson is pushing too hard for too long and sucking too many sick people dry. Like, talk about ambulance chasers. This is just really unbelievable. And hey, this is what a full out and out consumeristic, capitalistic society will do for you. Let's prey on the sick and the indigent, and let's hope that some of the sick and the indigent actually have money to be able to buy their drugs from you. So, I mean, this is the future, people. I know that they say they're going to open an investigation. Don't think that half of the Congress isn't in bed with Big Pharma. Remember, more than 50% of all of our legislators are millionaires now in Congress, and I'm sure it's going to be more for 2015. But here's an even more interesting article, and this one I found yesterday. This really kind of plays to the psychology of things, things that we've talked about before in regards to how they play us and how they convince us of things, the whole ability for them to play the game where they create a cognitive dissonance where when even though people might have a sinking feeling that what they believe is not true, that because it is how they've constructed their reality framework, no matter what you tell them, they will never see the truth as to what is happening. This just attests to the power of not only brainwashing, but of absolute blind faith in those in charge. There's a story that came out of Science Alert yesterday titled, "The Placebo Effect is Getting Even Stronger with Time, Says Study. We're All Being Fooled." And this happened to be a placebo effect that they were using with drugs. In clinical trials designed to test the effect of drugs, researchers randomly assign one of two courses of treatment to study participants. And again, you know, these people that sign up, we looked at this with all the new Ebola, mad science gone mad drugs. They were healthy people that were lining up to be the first humans ever to have these newfangled RNA switch flipping Ebola drugs injected into them to be a part of a study to get a few dollars and maybe some name recognition, which I don't even think they gave real names of some of the study participants, to line up and be a test bed for Big Pharma. Like, how insane is that? Well, this was another one of those studies. The first group in this random study gets the experimental medication, and the second group, which they call the control group, is unwittingly given a placebo, which is a pill that intentionally does nothing at all, at least in the physical realm. The method is supposed to help researchers measure the effects of real drugs being studied by distinguishing the effects of taking the medication from the effects of not taking it. And placebos have no inherent effect of their own, except for a phenomenon called the placebo effect, in which some participants imagine that they're getting the benefits of real medication. It typically, from everything that I've ever read about placebo effects, typically is just a sugar pill that they give them, but they tell them that they're giving them the real drug. This placebo effect happens because patients mistakenly believe, it's all about belief, people, that they are taking the trial drug, unaware that they have been placed in a control group. And the reason why I'm reading this is to illustrate how powerful the power of belief is. I mean, I've, throughout my lifetime, there were a couple different things that I've looked at in depth detail. One is religion and how strong the belief in some entity sitting in a throne or in a whatever, in a spaceship, in a room with 40 Vestal Virgins, how believing in some entity in the sky has caused probably more bloodshed across the history of humankind throughout the history of the world. Or how strong, you know, there are lots of different studies of people, let's say, with cancer and the power of prayer. And I know people have said, oh, you pray for me, it'll save me. And then lots of people go, oh, that's total, absolute, utter bullshit. But when they've looked at groupthink, chanting, concentration, mind over matter, body being able to heal, mind being able to heal body, there actually is something to that. Science actually says that there is something to that now that they are exploring as part of the brain project. So look out. But we do know when we looked at microbiota and the gut flora that vagus nerve has a direct connect to the brain. So we know that there are different ways that brain and body are connected. So it's very possible. Just saying. But anyway, back to the story. What's interesting about this is that they have brainwashed an entire society to believe something. And now we're finding, per this study, that the power of belief using placebos is very strong. So anyway, let's read the rest of this. So what is amazing about the placebo effect is it can lead to actual physiological responses from the body, as if the patient had actually been taking a real drug all along, for which medical literature offers a range of possible explanations. And it only gets weirder. A new study conducted by researchers at McGill University in the U.S. has found that the placebo effect is actually getting stronger as decades go by. And yes, you want to know why it's getting stronger is because they are getting better at brainwashing. They have been working at this now for 50 plus years, brainwashing at least the American public. And we are all happy to be in our brainwashed trance, believing what is fed to us from that idiot box. And now from the computers and our mobile devices, you know, they addict us with those things. We've talked about the dopamine addiction. I actually found a big scientific study that outlined exactly everything we talked about. The reaction in the brain and that section of the brain that produces dopamine when we get our fix of TV, or when we get our fix of our mobile app, or when we get a new email that gets us all excited, when we eat high fructose corn syrup, when we play that video game, it sucks us more and more into this machine that then brainwashes us. I mean, it's pretty deep. They have tapped into biological processes to actually brainwash and addict us to things and then tell us it's all good. Anyway, back to this. A new study conducted by researchers at McGill University in the U.S. has found that the placebo effect is actually getting stronger as decades go by, fooling more people into perceiving illusory medical benefits that shouldn't be there at all. And again, now let's take a fast forward to when the laws changed that allowed commercials for pharmaceuticals to be on TV. Most countries don't allow this, but in the United States, back a few years ago, they decided to allow them on TV, and they now get you begging your doctor for some of these newfangled drugs that they showed you on TV. Like when I went to go see our pediatrician for the school physical this year, and I told you that she was telling us the next year she's pointing to the CDC vaccine schedule. She's like, oh yes, New York approved this new meningitis vaccine that is now mandatory, and make sure you watch TV for the commercial because they'll tell you all about it, she says with a smile. Yes, they'll tell you all about it. They'll get you begging for your new meningitis vaccine because they've convinced you about the fear, about how afraid that we should be that my kid's going to die from meningitis in New York State, where we only get 3 months of warm and we're lucky if we get a week or two of 90 degree days. But oh, I should be scared of meningitis that she could get from mosquitoes. When maybe if we're lucky in New York State, when you look at the numbers, there might be 4 cases a year. And per RFK Jr. getting up in front of the legislature in Albany, there are actually more deaths and damage to children who get that meningitis vaccine than there are actually by children who get meningitis in New York State. Never in my life have I known anyone in New York to get meningitis in my 48 years, and none of us have ever been vaccinated. Fear, fear, fear. Fear is another tool of brainwashing. Anyway, back to the story. Analyzing the results of 84 clinical trials of drugs conducted around the world between 1990 and 2013, the researchers found that pain inhibition experienced by patients taking placebos in control groups increased steadily over the period, culminating in a 30% decrease in pain levels by 2013. In other words, it's a better time than ever for patients to take completely fake pills, as our capacity to dupe ourselves into thinking we're taking the real thing is at an all-time high. So, hey, you know what? Don't worry about the fact that there's all these generic drugs out there that are getting rubber stamped that really aren't as useful as the name brand drugs, because hey, nobody's really testing them, and B, you think that you're getting the effects anyway. This study asks why. Well, the first factor to consider is that the researchers found that this phenomenon is only occurring where? In the U.S. Hey, imagine that. In the U.S., where our government has, as per the NDAA of 2013, legalized using propaganda on its own population. Yes, in the United States. And it seems that they're doing a damn good job of it. The placebo effect happens everywhere, but this documented increase of 30% in placebo responses has only showed itself in comparatively recent American trials, with trials conducted in Europe and Asia revealing no such change over the period. And it's because, at least in Europe, they're still half awake. Did you see there were hundreds of thousands of people out screaming in the streets this weekend protesting the TTIP in Europe? That's the European Trans, I don't remember what it stands for. Trans-Pacific, no, that's a TPP, the Transatlantic something, whatever. It's the TPP for the European Union. They're also the ones that are refusing GMOs, and they know that this is going to open the door. They kicked out many of the GMO corporations and some of these chemical companies who happen to be one and the same, like Syngenta. Syngenta got, no, BASF, that's who it was. BASF got booted out of Germany and moved their headquarters to Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, because the United States is much more GMO-friendly. Anyway, so with trials conducted in Europe and Asia revealing no such changes over the period. Let's see what this Australian document says for the reason, the most likely reasons for the change are that the trials in the U.S., but not elsewhere, are now being run for longer and also involve more people than they used to. Well, that's a bullshit excuse. Since 1990, how about the American public is beyond help and have been so brainwashed they'll believe anything an authority figure tells them. That's how they've been groomed. That's the reason anyone with half a brain looking at that could see that. We are so dumbed down in this country and so conditioned to believe what is fed to us by anyone in a white coat, that it's not a wonder to me. Since the 1990s, the average clinical trial in the U.S. has jumped from 4 weeks to 12 weeks long, and from fewer than 50 patients to over 500. How awesome is that? Let's make sure if we increase tenfold for the number of people that we're injecting with these new experimental drugs in these clinical trials. And these are big changes and seem to be having significant effects on results. And I think they offer them a dollar value. You've seen them in the paper. I remember in college, I had friends who used to look for ways to make money, and that was one. They would go to the university and participate in these new crazy clinical trials. Quote, the data suggests that longer and larger trials are associated with bigger placebo responses, says Jeffrey Mogul, a professor of pain studies and senior author of this study. This in turn tends to result in the failure of those trials since it makes it harder for pharmaceutical companies to prove that the drug being tested is more effective than a treatment with a placebo. Well, damn that it's going to make it harder for the pharmaceutical companies to test their drugs on people. So we better fast track them. Like we heard a few weeks ago, I don't remember what that plan was called, but we heard that promo video from those Congress people talking about how horrible it is that the FDA takes so long to test drugs, and it's keeping life-saving new mad science gone mad from the general populace that could be benefiting. And so let's just fast-track it all and get it out there. It might hurt a few people, but hey, it might save a few thousand more. Other singular factors that might be causing increased responses to placebos in the U.S. could be the effects to, here we go, and this is what I said, the effects of direct-to-consumer drug advertising, which only takes place, in the U.S., and apparently they also approved it in poor little New Zealand. The emergence of commercial research bodies and the greater exposure to the idea of placebos in the media, the research suggests. And I'm going to tell you, absolutely, because the TV told them so, they're going to eat it up, hook, line, and sinker, believe it, and beg their doctor for the new cure. In any case, it is something that the medical industry will want to get on top of as the move to conducting longer and larger drug trials, ostensibly for the purpose of testing efficacy, seems to be backfiring when it comes to getting new therapeutic solutions on the market. Well, hey, you know what? If we go back to this Valiant Pharmaceutical CEO, sounds to me he just found his new cash cow. His new cash cow is selling sugar pills and increasing the price 5,300%. Hey, that's going to be 5,300% of pure profit. Oh, my God. If there is not a study that shows you what a huge, huge wall we're up against for trying to wake people up, this would be it. In any case, yeah. Anyway, I went over that already. Quote, the greater the improvement in patients treated with placebos in clinical trials, the more difficult it can be to demonstrate the beneficial effects of pain-relieving medication, says Robert W. Dworkin, a professor of anesthesiology, neurology, and psychiatry, right in my backyard, the University of Rochester's School of Medicine and Dentistry, who was not involved in the study. This important study increases our understanding of these placebo group responses and thereby provides a basis for improving the design of clinical trials and accelerating the development of analgesic medications that can bring greater relief to patients suffering from chronic pain. This research was published in the publication called Appropriately Pain. And yes, you know, the fact that when you look at this doctor, this professor, he's a professor of anesthesiology, neurology, and psychiatry. You know, that's one connection that we see happening more and more with this brain project, is not only understanding the bits and bolts of the brain and how it works, but also the psychiatric issues and how to manipulate the brain behind that. And that's why we're going to hop into some DARPA stuff here a little bit later. I have some stories on that, some brain stuff, but really quick, I want to go, because we mentioned some of these new drugs and eugenics and the aging population. This was the story I found the other day out of Science, sciencemag.org. This was from October 5th. That actually came out a week and a half ago, with two cute little kitties is the picture. It says, DNA vaccine sterilizes mice and could lead to one-shot birth control. And I'm really thinking that this probably is something very similar to what Billy Gates has been working on. He probably decided to test it in mice and now in kitty cats as well before they start launching it on the American public. Who, of course, they'll be telling them on TV how great it is and look at how easy it is. You only need one shot ever. You won't have to remember to take a pill and don't have to worry about having screaming memes, and that's a good thing. Yeah, well, not a good thing if we look at the fact that eventually it's going to lead to the extermination of the human race as we don't have any more offspring. All right, we'll read a little bit of this. Animal birth control could soon just be a shot away. A new injection makes males and female mice infertile by tricking their muscles into producing hormone-blocking antibodies. If the approach works in dogs and cats, researchers say, it could be used to neuter and spay pets to control the reproduction in feral animal populations. A similar approach could one day spur the development of long-term birth control options for humans. And yes, what I love is how they connect feral animal populations to humans, because according to the elite, we are feral humans. We are not as educated as them. We're not as elite as them. And of course, they always point to third world nations for this, but don't think this isn't going to be rolled out across the board. Says, quote, this looks incredibly promising, says William Swanson, director of the animal research at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden in Ohio. And we are all very excited about this approach that is going to be one that really works. For decades, the go-to method for controlling animal reproduction has been spay or neuter surgeries. And I know, I got to say, it's pretty horrible what they do to poor little female kitties, especially in doggies. But on the other hand, you know, there are so many that don't have homes that it's pretty horrible to not spay or neuter them. But the surgeries, which require animals to be anesthetized, can be expensive. One reason that many cats and dogs remain unfixed and the feral animal populations continue to grow. Nearly 2.7 million dogs and cats were euthanized in the U.S. shelters last year, and a cheaper, faster method of sterilization is considered a holy grail for animal population control. And I don't know, I guess for kitties and doggies, they don't really have much of an argument with this. I mean, I guess the whole eugenics and stopping reproduction completely, I do. But to reduce some of the feral population, I mean, I would rather have their population reduced slightly with something I don't know about testing RNA vaccines. I mean, what are we going to happen? What's going to happen when these animals start bumping into walls, or we find out that this DNA vaccine went awry and it starts consuming brain matter or something? You know, so it makes me sad that these poor animals are being used as guinea pigs. And something interesting that I found out about this vaccine when I was digging into exactly how it worked, and be cautious here, young men out there, because this talks about this GNRH, capital G, small n, capital R, capital H, plugged in into Google and do a little reading on it, because the same releasing, which gonadropinin releasing hormone, GNRH, is the same one that they're messing with in this new male birth control solution. And I don't know if it was a vaccine or if it was a pill, but it's the same chemical that they are working on for this male birth control. Anyway, to get back to the story, to get there, researchers have already created vaccines that trigger an immune response in animals, and this response produces antibodies that block gonadotropin-releasing hormone, which is the GNRH, required by all mammals to turn on the pathways that spur egg or sperm development. This vaccine class, including deer contraceptive gonacon, so they're going to be giving this to deer as well, which I wonder if they give it to deer, are they going to get rid of hunting? Because remember, hunting was all about reducing the population so they didn't starve to death. Have been shown to effectively work as well in both male and female birth control in animals. But like many human immunizations, the vaccines rely on an immune response that eventually dwindles away, forcing use of booster shots every few years. Biologist Bruce Hay of the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena and colleagues took a different approach to blocking GNRH. Rather than relying on animals' immune systems to create antibodies, he and his colleagues have now taken another step down the path, man, science gone man, and engineered a piece of DNA that, when packaged inside of inactive virus shells and injected into mice, turns the muscle cells of the animals into anti-GNRH antibody factories, meaning that forever and ever, it's going to make sure it kills the hormone that creates the ability for eggs and sperm to create a new organism. Because muscle cells are some of the longest lasting in the body, they continue to churn out antibodies for 10 or more years. And both male and female mice with high enough levels of the antibodies were rendered completely infertile when Hayes' team allowed them to mate 2 months later, the team reports online today in the Current Biology publication. That two-month delay is because of how long it takes the muscles to start producing enough antibody, Hay explains. But going forward, one goal is certainly to try other systems that wouldn't have that type of time lag. How long is it going to be after approval for use in humans before they are putting this on the recommended CDC schedule for your 9-year-old? Because they're going to say, hey, 10 years? 9, just like your Gardasil that's out there for getting sexually transmitted diseases and sexual cancers. Let's make sure we line up your 9-year-old because, you know, 10 years, that'll make your 9-year-old 19. And then by 19, that'll protect them from being a teenager and getting pregnant. And then by 19, we could select another booster for them to go to 29 at least. And maybe by then, it'll be permanent. But they won't tell you. And this is just insane. Permanent birth control, at least 10 years, turning your muscles into antibody factories to kill your reproduction. Hayes team has also shown the same approach could be used to make female mice generate antibodies to the Zona Pellucida, P-E-L-L-U-C-I-D-A, Pellucida, a layer of proteins that surrounds the egg cells. In these cases, animals continue to produce eggs, but sperm cannot fertilize them. The advantage to blocking these proteins, Hayes says, is that the treatment doesn't affect hormone levels, which are critical regulators of all types of behavior. Well, phew. There might be some instances in wild animals where you just want to inhibit fertility, but not disrupt an animal's behavior, he says. And if the approach was used to design long-term contraception for humans, researchers would similarly not want to drastically affect hormone levels. Well, that's good to know. For now, the question is how effective the drug will be in animals other than mice. And the challenge is always moving between species, says Swanson. Yes, but they set up these large clinical trials and idiots just line right up for it for $20 to be able to be a part. Who's already planning to test out Hayes' approach in cats. So if it works, he says, it could change the way communities deal with feral cat populations, but we'll have to figure out how to control these populations without being harmful to individual cats. And this kind of lifelong contraception might be a safe and effective way to do that. Wow, talk about a double-edged sword, man. This is really playing with fire. Joyce Briggs, the president for the Alliance for Contraception in Cats and Dogs, an organization aimed at speeding advances in non-surgical contraception, says that a, quote, long-term contraception with a duration of 10 years or more could be a true game changer for dogs and cat welfare, preventing unwanted litters for the many animals who will never have access to sterilization surgery and providing a much less invasive and affordable option for pet owners. Hayes' team is now testing their new approach to block other hormones and proteins in mice. Yes, DNA mad research gone mad. And he says that there are lots of other molecules that we can try to target now that we know this works. So there you have it. Talk about really scary. I mean, again, I don't have issue with trying to help spur the procreation of many, many unwanted cats and dogs who die horrible, lonely lives of starvation. But on the other hand, double-edged sword, they're using them as a test bed to then create something for humans. All right, so I guess we might as well continue on the mad science string, because here was another one that I found out of Science Alert. This is from yesterday, October 12th. Researchers map genes that extend life by as much as 60% if deleted. Yes, they reach for the delete key and find ways to delete genes that'll then lead to a 60% increase in your lifespan. Don't think this is going to be tested out in the elite to begin with. Again, clinical trials, step right up for $49.95. You could be one of the first humans ever to get some of this newfangled research that might increase your lifespan by 60%, or, hey, in the fine print, make you grow an arm out of the back of your head. A 10-year effort to identify the genes responsible for aging has led to researchers finding 238 specific genes that, when removed, significantly extend the lifespan of yeast cells in laboratory testing. If the results of this genetic editing can be replicated in humans, which is a possibility, since many of the genes and genetic pathways involved are also found in higher life forms, we may be able to seriously boost human lifespans by turning off the aging process. The researchers found that the life of yeast could be extended by as much as 60% in some circumstances. This study looks at aging in the context of the whole genome and gives us a more complete picture of what aging is, says Brian Kennedy, president and CEO of the Buck Institute for Research on Aging in the U.S. and the lead author of the study. It also sets up a framework to define the entire network that influences aging in this organism. Together with researchers from the University of Washington, the Buck Institute laboriously examined the development of some 4,698 separate yeast strains, each featuring a single gene deletion. And the researchers counted cells in each strain to track their respective replicative lifespan, monitoring how many daughter cells the mother cell could ultimately produce by cell division. We had a small needle attached to a microscope, and we used that needle to tease out daughter cells away from the mother every time it divided, and then counted how many times the mother cell divided. And we had several microscopes running all the time. The process may have been excruciatingly delicate and time-consuming, but it yielded results, and the researchers have now identified 238 genes responsible for aging in yeast, which, when removed, extend the lifespan of individual strains. And while scientists already knew a minority amongst these genes affected aging, it's the first time that 189 of the others have been linked to aging process, giving us the most comprehensive view of what the researchers call the, quote, conserved mechanisms of aging, unquote, in yeast. While the duration of yeast lifespans might not ordinarily keep you up at night, there are a few reasons why it should, perhaps. From a genetic perspective at least, the ingredient that helps make bread rise or beer so compelling shares more than a few things in common with you and me. Almost half of the genes that we found that affect aging are conserved in mammals as well, and in theory, any of these factors could be a therapeutic agent to expand health span in humans. And what we have to do now is figure out which ones are amenable to targeting. Theoretical applications for combating aging in people could be huge. Oh, yes, a multi-billion dollar sorry, I had to get a drink. A multi-billion dollar market, I am sure. And in the most stunning results of the study, which is now published in Cell Metabolism, researchers found that removing a particular gene called LOS1 extended the life of yeast by 60%. LOS1 is involved in the process of building proteins, but it is also related to separate genes respectively concerned with caloric restriction and DNA damage control. Calorie restriction has been known to extend lifespans for a long time, and we did know that. We read a couple stories about that a long time ago, how fasting, and you can look that up. I don't remember what the time span is between fasts, but fasting has definitely been shown to slow down the aging process, where gorging has been shown to quicken the aging process. The DNA damage response is linked to aging as well. LOS1 may be connected to these different processes. So put on a seatbelt for that one. They're going to start deleting genes from the genome to extend life. And I don't know where to end up. We only have a couple minutes left. There was a brand new CRISPR tool that was released that's even bigger, badder, and better than the CRISPR-Cas9 for gene editing. But maybe we'll take a look at that tomorrow. Here's one more out of Science Alert again. Mad science. Scientists are making progress on an exercise pill that mimics the effects of working out. So don't worry about it. You don't have to get off your butt in front of the TV. Just take this pill and it'll mimic exercise. And we'll market it to you on the TV. Being fit and healthy is great, but finding the motivation to hit the gym or get out on a bike continues to be a problem for many of us. Trying to reap the benefits of exercise without any actual exercise is definitely an issue. Hey, you got to hold on one second here, because you know what? I forgot something, and it's called my bumper. I had to kind of fake it to kick off the show, but let me just turn these back on so the bumper plays at the end of the show. There we go. All right. Trying to reap the benefits of exercise without any of the actual exercise is a challenge scientists have been grappling with for years, but an international team of researchers has just made some major headway, creating a blueprint of the body's molecular reactions to exercise. You know, when we look at just them cracking every mystery in the universe, this can't be a good thing. I mean, yeah, we'll be able to live forever and get rid of genes that make us age and take a pill that makes our body think it exercised. But what kind of an Agenda 21 homogenized white room world is this going to be in the future? They've managed to identify 1,000 molecular changes in skeletal muscles caused by exercise. And if they can figure out which of these biological modifications are the most significant, we would be just a step closer to the reality of having a pill, having an exercise pill as an alternative to a real workout. So there you go. Maybe we'll start here tomorrow. Says, actually, you know, when we look at how strong they have discovered the power of placebo is in the United States, I think that would be a great place to start. It's also proven that some of this pharmaceutical research into biologics, the United States would be a great place for them to see whether or not they even have to make improvements, or they could just tell us that we're taking this. There actually were people that stepped up for this really quick. 4 healthy male volunteers were used as what? Oh, human guinea pigs for the experiment, offering muscle samples both before and after an intense 10-minute stretch on an exercise bike. And these samples were then used by researchers to inform their report. And of course, developing drugs that stimulate 1,000 molecular changes is no easy task, and that is why scientists now need the next step, and there we go, to figure out which of these are most important. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Today's Tuesday, so it's live all night. Stick and play.